Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Australian singer and songwriter Flynn Gurry has spent the past few years rapidly making waves in the Australian music industry. He most recently signed to Cult Artists for Bookings and Woolstore Music, the management company helmed by beloved indie folk duo Pierce Brothers, and also inking a deal with ABC Records. Following a remarkable few years supporting the likes of Ian Moss, King Stingray, Ash Grunwald, and Kim Churchill, Flynn also won the Triple J Unearthed One Night Stand competition in 2024, which saw him perform alongside G-Flip, Rule, What's So Not, Thelma Plum, and more. Shortly thereafter, Flynn became a Triple J Unearthed featured artist, going on to support the Dregs on a national tour and closed out 2024 performing at the Beyond the Valley Festival. In 2025, Flynn has already ticked off a national tour with Pierce Brothers, was named Port Fairy Folk Festival's Emerging Artist of the Year, and has also supported the Dregs, Kim Churchill, the 502s, and Dice. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Flynn Gurry.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Currently, thank you so much for having me on, firstly. Currently, I'm joining you from a little beach town at the very bottom of Australia called Warrnambool. I'm traveling between two major cities at the moment, so I've stopped off at this little town and joining you from there. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel, cool, I want to be creating music, I want to be in this world, and how did that journey progress?
Yeah, well, as a little boy, my parents used to take me and my brothers and sister to lots of like music festivals and different gigs and things that we're able to go to. And one particular one, there's quite a world-class festival that happens about 20 minutes away from my house. And it's called the Port Fairy Folk Festival. And that's really, I remember watching all them, you know, incredible musicians and songwriters and just as a little boy kind of catching that bug and going, oh, I want to do that. I want to play guitar. I want to sing some songs. So that's definitely my first memory of being like, wow, that's so cool. I want to do that.
So how did that then become the next steps of you doing it professionally?
Yeah, well, it kind of just built a love for music for me. And then once I picked up the guitar when I was about 14, it kind of all made sense. I discovered some different tunings on the guitar and then pretty quickly became really hooked and kind of, it's really now at this age that I'm kind of reflecting on them earlier years going to that festival where I have, you know, all my kind of, my love for folk music and singer-songwriter music has definitely come from that place in Australian music. And so, yeah, it kind of gave me the love for music. And then so when I picked up the guitar and started writing songs, it really quickly just progressed and I sort of got really addicted to playing songs.
How do you create a song?
It kind of feels like they just fall out of the sky I always like to have a guitar kind of laying around the house, and it often starts with a sort of little riff, and then it's sort of a melody. And I'm always trying to write in my journal, you know, and just like ideas for lyrics and things that I'm feeling or experiencing at the moment. And so when kind of the melody kind of comes, I can start to kind of connect the two, sort of my book and my guitar, and connect the two in that way. And yeah, it can be a bit of a slow process, but it also can happen really fast. So,
and do you ever collaborate with other writers, or you only really write by yourself?
I've just started writing with other people the last sort of 18 months, which has been such a incredible experience. And I've been fortunate to kind of travel around the world. I've done a lot of writing in Scotland and England and Poland as well. Yeah, it's been such a bringing lots of different ideas to the table, and also just having someone kind of keeping the session going. Like sometimes I think if you're writing by yourself, you kind of start to, you know, maybe you're a bit distracted or something. Whereas if you're writing with someone else, it kind of, you keep going until you get the song. So it's really, I find that really useful. When you feel like you're on something that you're both really connecting with, I think that's such a special moment, and it often happens really fast, which is great.
And now having these new energies in the room while you're writing, is that something that you had to get used to, or it was just a natural next step progression?
I think it was both, because it was, you know, writing with someone else, going from not writing with people at all and just doing, having everything, you know, solely by yourself, sort of having, you know, it can sometimes challenge your ego a little bit. You know, if they're like, hey, I think this idea is great. Well, then it's sort of just got to be whose idea is best, and sometimes you've got to put your ego aside. And so that was a bit of a learning curve for me, particularly with things that were like very close. If it was an emotional feeling or something like you know, an experience that I was, it was particularly based around something that I'd brought to the table, I could get a bit you know, I wanted to protect it or something like that. But I've soon realized that no, that's kind of, as much as you want to do that, it's not best for the song. So now it's turned into where it's sort of, you just got to let your guard down and just be open to whatever happens. And so, yeah.
What's coming up for the next period? You just released your latest track. Tell us the name, what it's about, and then what's coming up for the next period of time.
So the track is Don't Stop Dreaming. I just released it. I recorded it with Joel Quatermain and Edwin White. I wrote half of the song in Scotland, half of it in Australia, backstage after a gig one night. And it's really just a song about wanting to keep going. You know, the music industry is a tough one, and particularly I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time on the road in the last sort of few years, traveling around playing music, and post-tour blues is a real thing. And this was after a particular tour I'd done, which was pretty crazy, and I needed to find the spark to get me going again, you know, and remember why I started this whole music journey in the first place. And so that's where the song is kind of born out of. And then it was we brought it to life in the studio, and I'm really, really pumped with how it's being received as well. So it's been awesome.
You mentioned post-tour blues. What is that specifically? Because obviously we, the audience, we don't really experience or understand that. So from your experience, can you explain?
Yeah, so post-tour blues, I think for me, this particular tour that I was talking about, you know, I was playing to like 1,000 people every night for like a few months, and it was just a crazy, crazy experience. And you would walk out on stage and people were screaming and all this sort of stuff. And it's just, you're experiencing these such crazy highs, and you feel like you've got momentum, and you've just like, everything's, you know, sort of going, the ball's really rolling. And then, you know, when tour stops, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, what do I do? Do now, you know, what's next? And sometimes there's not, you know, there's not a next. I was fortunate that after some period of time there was a next, and there was another tour that popped up and that I could jump on. But sometimes, yeah, as the life as a creative or a musician, as a freelancer, sometimes you just don't really know what's next, and sometimes that can get the better of you. Like I have a great friend, and he's a freelance cinematographer, and sometimes he's got so much work, and it's so easy to just go, and you're working, and you're constantly being creative, and there's all this momentum, and you're meeting people, and you're constantly inspired, and then it all stops for a period of time, and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And it's a pretty wild sort of roller coaster of emotions. But yeah, it's important to just kind of like sit with your feelings and trust in that it'll work out, and something will come up. It always does. So yeah.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Live for me is everything. You know, I just love the energy that every different room that I play in brings, and I love meeting people, and I love sharing my songs and telling the stories that go with the songs, and I love playing my guitar really fast, so that's fun and it sounds loud so that's awesome. But live is just that's where it's what it's all for, really, for me. Is I would love to record music so that people can connect with it, but then that means that I can go and play live in front of people. That's kind of what really this all is about, because I just love it so much. So yeah.
I'm a dude that's right up in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing. I'll take my cell phone out for a couple of videos, couple of photos, and I'll put my phone away. I notice these days a lot of people are posting, tweeting, whatever they're doing with their phones for a lot of period of time. From the person on the stage, i.e. you, your personal preference or experience, seeing a bunch of phones potentially, do you not feel that takes away from that connection and energy you spoke of, or it's just where society is at this time?
Yeah, I think so. I think it definitely, as soon as the phone goes in front of the face, there's something between, you know, you and the artist. But then it's also, you know, we're capturing these moments that we're a part of, and I'm really lucky that my good friend because he's the cinematographer, even just with his phone when we're at gigs or something and we're watching an amazing band, I don't need to take anything because he just captures it. Like, he'll just take a few things and they look great and we can post them and that's all great. Yeah, it's definitely a strange thing. My shows that I've been playing, particularly on the weekend, like when I played Don't Stop Dreaming and people were quite excited and they got their phone out to start recording. That was fantastic. I think because, you know, it potentially sharing the word and spreading the word, you know, it all helps, particularly when you're trying to build up an audience. But then, you know, it got to the back half of the song and people were still filming, and I just got everyone to clap along, because you can't film while you're clapping along. Yeah. So it kind of created this sing along and this clapping along, and it was kind of this energy of the room that kind of really lifted me. So I think it's important, but I mean, people like Jack White, where you go to the shows and you're not allowed to take your phone in, I think that's awesome. And I think that's so cool. But for me, as an emerging kind of building my audience, I think it's also powerful. So yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, that one.
You've sort of headlined your own shows. You've been at festivals. You've opened for other artists. Naturally, you bring your A-game energy to all of those different circumstances. What's the difference for you in those different scenarios?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, the opening for other artists is that's really fun, because it's kind of no pressure, you know, you've got nothing to lose but just to go out and try and amp up the crowd and get them going. And then festivals are just such a wonderful thing, because everyone is there because they love music, and it's such a wonderful experience. I love playing festivals and also getting to connect with so many other artists at the festival. That's one of the most special things about festivals. And then headline shows, I just did some shows over the weekend, and it was kind of like the first time that I'd really enjoyed them, because I find it a lot of pressure, you know, people paying money for a ticket and coming along, and, you know, what do you put on the set list, and what do you, you know, when you're just opening up for someone, no one really expects too much of the support act. So it's kind of a more freeing experience. But definitely the headline show on the weekend, where people were singing along to the songs and the lyrics and stuff, that was a pretty incredible feeling that I hadn't felt before. So it was really powerful. You know, it's kind of nice to be doing lots of different things, lots of different gigs, and not the same thing all the time. So yeah, festivals in between runs of shows, and then, you know, supports every now and again. It's a great balance, I think.
You reference that pressure for you and expectations of the audience, which I find interesting as a person who goes to concerts, because when I go to concerts, I don't look at the stage on Google. I don't look at the set list, what they're going to be performing or not performing, because I want to be in the moment. I want to be, oh, this is the next song. Wow, this is the next song. And not to be leaving, oh, I didn't like the show because they didn't play this song, because there's no expectations involved. So it's actually interesting now to hear from your side, being the artist, that now becomes pressure on you for the performance. And I'm sure other artists feel the same, because the expectations involved from the audience. What are your feelings around that sentence or that thing that I've just mentioned?
I mean, I think you are the perfect kind of live music supporter that we all want at our shows, you know. that sounds awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's such a funny thing, because, you know, I'm, as a songwriter, I'm constantly writing new songs all the time. So I kind of really, I love playing the old songs, but I also love playing new songs and what I'm writing at currently, particularly for the shows over the weekend. I had some people message and say, oh, you're going to play this song. And I did add them in the set because I was like, well, they're paying money to come see the show. That's fun that someone wants to hear that song. I'm happy to do that. But I think it would be really interesting. I see it with some really big artists who maybe got their break kind of through one particular song and then having to play that for the kind of the rest of your life sort of thing. And I've been talking about this with a guy I've been writing songs with. And when we've been kind of finishing the songs, we go, would we play this for the rest of our lives? And if we say yes, then that's we've done it. We've made a good song and we can kind of go, right, well, we can record this now. So yeah.
So if the answer is no in those situations, do you tweak the songs or just sort of throw them out?
Tweak them maybe, or maybe it's just, I don't know. We haven't really got to the point where some songs have just kind of disappeared out of the Dropbox folder or they've just kind of taken the back seat and maybe they're just not quite ready yet. And they'll just take some time to, for my taste to change or something. Cause yeah, you never know. Some songs just come back and even old songs. I mean, even old songs that I play that when I didn't have that saying when I'd finish a song, I kind of go through different times where I really love playing that song and sometimes where I'm like, oh, I wish I was playing something else right now. But then it's really funny how they just take on new meaning and get themselves new lives all the time. So it's really cool.
I love me a CD. I love the journey of the experience of unpacking the booklet, the thank yous, the listening to song one to whatever number. For me, it's an energy exchange. Thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you put into your creative process. I'm unsure if you're aware, massive increase or upsurge of physicals around the world. Like a couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, they gauge something for tax purposes. And naturally, there needs to be a large number of exchanges daily for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again last year, CDs have now been put back in this basket. And the research is showing that it's a teenager, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. And then we also have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I buy vinyl. So I love buying vinyl and something physical. And like you said, getting the booklet and all the kind of inserts and the artwork and having something physical. I really enjoy that. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting time, particularly playing live and busking and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I'm still selling CDs at shows and I don't have vinyl yet, but I'm still selling lots of CDs at shows and things. So I wasn't playing at a time when there was no, streaming services. So I can't really compare what it was. I hear, some of the older musos and they talk about, we used to sell a lot more CDs, but definitely I think when we can stream every song at any point, through the click of a button on our phone. I think people really love the transaction of buying a CD, meeting the artist, getting the CD, having the artwork. I still think it's going to just become more popular again because we have access to so much things, but on our phones. But the CD and the vinyl is something so real, and it feels like people have put their souls into it, and I think that can't be replaced on the streaming. So yeah, I'm really interested to see how it goes. And that's some really interesting stats about the CDs. I'd heard about the vinyl, but I didn't know CDs were making a comeback like that. So that's really cool. I once heard that CDs, the way the file is, the way they're played, it's like the best quality of music, like the best amount of data you can put on a disc that's the best quality of music you can listen to it. I mean, that's great because we want people listening to our music,
Yes.
Sounds good.
Like I said, I've got my CDs and I was living overseas and I came back here to South Africa a couple of years ago and I wanted to get a CD player and everyone was like, you can't get CD players anymore. They're extinct and all that kind of stuff. In South Africa, there's a platform similar to Amazon called Takealot. And I went on there hoping for a one good option. And there were so many choices to choose from. I had to narrow it down and then narrow it down. And I got my set. As you said, when I listen to the same song on DSP or on Spotify, compared to listening to it on the CD on the same system, the CD sound quality is like this, a massive hug of sound compared to the DSP is like really muted and sort of tinny, if that's the right word.
No, and it is because, particularly with DSPs, you know, you kind of have to put your songs in a particular, upload a particular file and then the DSP itself will compress so that every song is kind of the same volume and all this sort of stuff, where the CD is just like, you can put so much data on that. It's awesome. So that's great.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 5 years, 2 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time, simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. Now you're on your journey in your car. If you had to push play to five artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of those artists, what songs would you play of them?
Straight off the top of my head, On the Road Trip, I love Mumford & Sons. Particularly the Babel album, that song Babel. Ben Howard, I love driving, listening to Ben Howard. And I've been such a big fan of his first two albums and only just listened to his third album the other day for some reason. I don't know why, I'm such a big fan. I took such a long time to listen to his third album. But I really loved it. I was driving sort of through these hills and it was beautiful. There's a Melbourne artist who is releasing music at the moment and their name's Umbra Moon. And they are just... this one of the most entertaining live performers I've seen. And I think they just released a new song, so I'd be putting that on because I haven't checked it out yet. And this is now a reminder that I should be putting it on. And then I've actually been listening to, in the gym, Hans Zimmer's soundtrack, like live soundtrack. I found that really, really crazy cool. And then I'm a massive Black Keys fan. So I think any album of the Black Keys, and I'm pretty happy. That'll keep me awake driving. So yeah, there's five artists. Yeah.
So Flynn, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Keep going to live music and keep playing music and enjoying it. And if you like an artist's music, make sure you let them know, because I think music's the way. So enjoy it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.